Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Live on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Can we go back? This is the moment. Tonight is the night. We'll fight till it's over. So we put our hands up like the ceiling can hold us. Like the ceiling can hold us. Go back. This is the moment. Tonight is the night. We'll fight till it's over. So we put our hands up like the ceiling can hold us. Like the ceiling can.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, hanging out until the top of the hour, then Dan McLaughlin with Inside Cardinals Nation. I'll be back from 9 until 10 with Dan Reardon for the Overhead Door Company of St. Louis Golf Show. But we head to D.C. now. Check in with Grant Paulson, who does it all. 106.7 The Fan, pre and post for the Capitals, MLB Network Radio. Grant, what's up, man?
Chris, how are you?
Doing well. I know you're very busy. This is, you know, one of the first times that here at KMOX, we unfortunately, in the last 5 years, haven't had the Blues-Cardinals overlap. It's a little lonely watching the Stanley Cup playoffs without being a part of it.
Yeah, we've had plenty of years like that as well, but for the first time in a long time in D.C., the Caps will be playing on to mid-May at this point. As people probably know, they've made the playoffs 10 of the 11 years, dating back toward the beginning of the Alex Ovechkin era, and in not one of those 10 postseason appearances, despite having three President's Trophies as the number one team in the league and many division titles as favorites to get out of the first couple rounds, have they ever escaped the second round and gotten to a conference final? And matter of fact, no D.C. sports team has made a Final Four in one of the four major sports in 19 years, 11 months, and 3 days before a couple nights ago. Not that anybody's counting.
You know, I think the Capitals and Blues, like, I think they're kind of similar in that vein, right? Especially in the 90s and 2000s, the Blues had some teams that were the best in the West, the best in the division, won a president's. And even over the last few years, just a team that has come up short repeatedly. Now, they haven't had the best player on the planet like Alexander Ovechkin, but I think there are some comps in terms of the fan base, and especially the two fan bases watching Nashville, the Blues watching Vegas this year. That's fair, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. If there is such a thing as a good comp for the Caps, the Blues is one that I've brought up in the past. I think Washington, for a couple of reasons, has, in terms of the Capitals, has probably taken the inability to get out of the second round to another level because of, A, the consistency of getting there, the 10 out of 11 years, almost always getting out of the first round. But on top of that, the number of collapses in the postseason, you're talking about multiple 3-1 leads that they squandered, a 3-1 lead in the waning minutes of a game five where a full goalie leads to a goal and then another collapse in the final minute of a game six soon thereafter to force a game seven. So it's not just that they haven't won, it's the excruciating way that they've lost in overtime and with bounces off skates, just puck luck, nonsense, quirky things that have worked against them at times over the years and a difference, little injuries in the postseason. The other caveat being it's not just a cap story, it's a kind of a DC sports story. You guys will remember very well the division series in 2012 when the Cardinals were down to their final strike six times or more. And
Peter Cosmo.
Game five where they trailed 6-0 and the Nats couldn't win that game. What Cardinals fans may not know is that the Nationals have won four divisions and had the best record in the NL multiple times since. And have still not gotten out of the first round. So it isn't just the Caps. It's the Nationals who can't win in the playoffs. The Redskins very rarely make the playoffs. And the Wizards have gotten a Game 7 of the second round without advancing before. But prior to Caps-Penguins Game 6 two nights ago, a big Washington win where the entire town went into euphoria, you were on a stretch here in town where you were 0 for 13 in potential clinching games to get to a conference final.
Yeah, I don't mean to, you know, throw stones or say this insultingly, but maybe the better comp to the Capitals is the Nationals because they both have arguably the best player in the league. Maybe that argument now is different in the NHL, but especially during, you know, Bruce Boudreau's heyday, Alexander Ovechkin, Bryce Harper, maybe that's the better comp. I'm wondering about Boudreau because we still have a drop that we play from 2 years ago when the Blues were playing the Minnesota Wild, and this guy from Minnesota called up, and he's like, the reason the Blues will lose this series is Mike Yeo. He's never won anything. I'm like, dude, the Wild's coach is Bruce Boudreau, and I love Bruce. I think he's a great coach. Everyone that knows him says he's a great guy, but despite the last 3 years under Barry Trotz, has anything changed under Barry Trotz from Boudreau, Grant?
Yeah, definitely. Stylistically, they're different coaches, and they ask of different buy-in and things from their players. I think Trotz's style is a little bit more playoff-friendly than Boudreau's, which is a little bit more wide open, up and down the ice with some speed, and you're going to give up some more chances on the defensive end. But you know, it took Trotz 4 bites at this apple now as well, being here and getting to the postseason. And lest we forget, if you go back and look at his history, he had never gotten out of the second round, and I guess 16 or so years as a coach, is one of the longest tenured coaches in the league in Nashville. I mean, he's one of the most winning NHL coaches in league history, if you're looking at regular season W's. And I mean, he's now coached in well over 100 playoff games, and he'll be coaching in a conference final for the first time. So it's not as though I would necessarily give him all the credit. I would say this. He had a heck of a series against Pittsburgh. He went to Braden Holtby after two losses in Columbus, and the Caps are 8-2 since this postseason. He made a couple of major lineup changes when Tom Wilson got suspended. No Andrei Burakovsky, their key wing with some speed on the second line. They lost Nicholas Backstrom to what we think is a broken bone in his hand blocking a shot. He wasn't able to play in the third period of a Game 5 win or Game 6 when they close out the series. So Boudreau turned to two rookies, put one on the third line at center defensively, stymie Sidney Crosby. Well, this was as good a coaching job as we've seen by a Caps coach in a long time.
Grant Paulson is with us. I think a lot of people in St. Louis, because of just kind of the Caps Blues thing, but also because of TJ Oshie, are rooting for Washington, getting to know Coach, TJ's dad, a little bit certainly, and what his family has dealt with. How has Washington taken to Oshie, and how has he been a part of that club, not just on the ice, but in the community too, Grant?
Oh, he's so popular here. People love TJ Oshie. He's had a really tough season. Last year, he was marvelous. He scored 33 goals, which tied Alex Ovechkin for the team lead. And you know, tying Alex Ovechkin for the team lead in goals is, I guess, a comp I would think of is like when Pujols was in his prime with the Cardinals, somebody else tying him for the home run lead on the team. But this year, Oshie missed a ton of time with some major concussion issues. It was scary. As you guys know, he's got two baby girls, a beautiful wife, and you know, he's very much involved on social media and in the community, as you said. You didn't see as much of him for a little while because he was overcoming some demons with his health. And after several weeks, he came back and he went through like a 20-game stretch without a goal, which for him is like going 50 games for somebody else. And it was a scuffle. He just wasn't playing that well. I don't think he was confident skating around. I think he was thinking about the injury a little bit, but he just plays so hard. And I think that's what people love about him here. And you guys saw that. Obviously, his ability in shootouts and what he did in the Olympics raised his national star higher than it ever was before. But he got a massive 8-year contract after last season, and the Caps are really banking on him being one of their leaders long after Alex Ovechkin and Nicholas Backstrom, who were in their mid-30s, to move on from the organization. And in this postseason, his numbers are decent. He's got 5 goals through a dozen games and 2 rounds. And he's really come to life late in the year. A couple weeks left, started to put up the usual suspect numbers you expect from 77. And as I said, I think the big key is his defensive effort. He's a 200-foot player. He, both ends of the ice, special teams, gives up on, and he's huge on the power play, and he gives his body up on the penalty kill. There's just nothing he won't and doesn't do. And I hate the cliche, but he's the kind of guy that you just absolutely have to have a couple of to have a shot. And he's a huge reason why the Capitals are still playing.
So what do you expect in the conference finals, and what do fans expect? Again, back to the Blues thing, like when they played the Blackhawks in a game 7 a couple of years ago, there was excitement, but there was like waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, how will this go horribly? Is there that? Is there excitement? Is it a mixture?
Well, it's more honestly the expecting and the disappointment, because as I said, you've been trained
so
for 20 years to get kicked in the stomach. I will say this, though. The tone has been very different the last couple of days, because there hasn't been a lot of talk about Tampa Bay yet, weirdly enough. This would be a problem if it was happening in the locker room. I mean, frankly, the players can't afford to do this, the coaching staff, and luckily they're professionals, so they're not going to. But fans are still reveling in this. They're still enjoying this, and I have no problem with that. And hosting the midday show on 106.7 The Fan, we still talked a lot today about beating the Penguins and what it means in D.C. sports, because this is 2 decades in the making here. I will say this. I do not expect them to advance to the Stanley Cup final. If they were healthy, I would absolutely give them a really good chance in this series, and I would probably pick them in 7 games over Tampa Bay. But the injury to Nicholas Backstrom is going to catch up to him, in my opinion. If, in fact, there's a broken bone in that hand, as is speculated, he's had it all bandaged up and wrapped up and hasn't been able to skate since the injury. And he's their best two-way player. Oshie's probably second on that list, but Backstrom's the guy for them. Defensively as a center in the postseason, you match up against whatever the top line is on the road, who also creates offensively in a way that few other guys can. And he skates next to Oshie on that second line. And when Ovechkin and Kuznetsov aren't on the ice, they give people fits. Not having Backstrom against a team with this much speed and skating ability, I think, could prove to be crippling. You can get by for a game like they did against Pittsburgh and play above your head and play inspired hockey. 7-game series and win in 4, you really got to be the better team to do that. And I think it's going to be hard with all their speed and depth in Tampa Bay.
Grant, final thing for you. You also do a great job on Sirius Talking Baseball. What do you make of the start to this season? It seems like kind of a weird start to the year in terms of teams like Washington, the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Indians, just kind of around. I think the weather played a factor for a lot of teams, but offense a little bit down. How have you kind of processed the first 5 or 6 weeks? How have your listeners kind of processed the first 5 or 6 weeks?
I think people here in D.C. were really worried about the Nationals, not specifically because of how poorly they were playing under a new manager and with some changes to the roster, but because of how great the Mets looked at 13-1 at one point, and they've just been a disaster over the last few weeks. And Washington's already moved ahead of them in the standings after everyone was trying to crown them the NL East champions. You know, specific to the Eastern Division, the Braves are a lot better. They're in first right now by a game and a half, and the Phillies are much improved. But I think what we've learned is that there is no cakewalk to be had like there was in the past. I'd say the same about the Central Division, as you guys well know, where Pittsburgh's going to be gaming. You know, they're going to be difficult and a thorn in the side. The Cubs are absolutely going to be more close to what they've been in the last month and the couple of weeks before that as one of the better teams in the NL. St. Louis has a chance to win that division, and Milwaukee loaded up, and they feel like they can contend as well. I think that's going to be the best kind of 1-4 race perhaps in baseball, but it's certainly going to be 3 deep. But I think that's kind of the big development for me, is just that a couple of the teams that we thought, based on their systems being loaded up and talented and having some kids like Atlanta, like Philadelphia, they're going to be maybe a year ahead of the schedule people projected. I don't anticipate one of them making the playoffs, but I certainly think they're going to have more to say about the postseason than they did in the past.
Grant, enjoy the conference finals. I know so many of us in St. Louis are rooting for you guys, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, brother.
That's very kind of you. I appreciate you, Chris. We love it.
All right, that's Grant Paulson from 106.7 The Fan, Capitals pre and post, MLB Network Radio as well. Back in a minute. We head to Memphis. My buddy, my old radio partner, Peter Edmiston, is on from 7 to 10 a.m. on Sports 56. Also writes for The Commercial Appeal, hosts Locked On Grizzlies, the NBA podcast. He's on Twitter at Peter Edmiston, and now he's in your ears. What's up, man?
Oh, Christopher Raby, my old Road Nemesis. How are you, buddy?
Doing well. This is, I got to get my NBA fix. Got to talk a little NBA, especially because we are in the midst right now of not having any basketball for how long? When are the conference finals going to start?
Well, I believe we're going to start on Sunday, I think.
So
typically when they want to do it. So, we got a little matter of the Eastern Conference to square away. But otherwise, yeah, it's in the West, we're just waiting right now. But it's the matchup everyone kind of knew this was coming. You know, we all played around, and it was nice seeing Utah do some fun stuff. And, you know, it was nice to see a dabber, little Minnesota, you know, welcoming them to the playoffs for the first time in a while. And, you know, the Pelicans were a nice story. But, I mean, we all kind of knew that this was going to end up with Warriors and Rockets in the West, and so it is. And now it's kind of a real matchup.
Yeah, we've got a few Missouri connections, including Quinn Snyder, who seems to be a much different and, I don't know if I say better coach than he was at Mizzou. I think that people have always thought highly of him as a basketball mind, but certainly if he's not out allegedly partying and doing illicit things with co-eds, maybe Salt Lake City a better spot for old Quinn.
Well, you know, the party scene there is surprisingly lit, my friend.
Yeah, no caffeine. Yeah.
You gotta make your own party. And that's the way it works around there. You're not gonna go and get the soft drinks. You gotta go find something a little harder. Maybe that's worked well for Quinn. I don't know. It's funny because you're right. The guy was always a really highly regarded basketball mind, but it didn't work out for, you know, his own reasons there. But it seems like some guys are just geared towards the NBA lifestyle. And
yeah,
it seems like it's kind of actually settled him down a little bit. I don't know if it was a temptation issue or who knows. I'm not in Quinn Snyder's mind. I can't even begin to speculate, but by all accounts, he's a much more composed, calm dude. He's, you know, very in tune with that organization, and they've done a remarkable job, considering especially that they lost Gordon Hayward in free agency last year. You thought, well, surely that's going to give them a step back, but no. I mean, they really exploded with Donovan Mitchell onto the scene. So yeah, I think they're going to be there for a while, and Quinn is maybe the front runner for Coach of the Year.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned maybe being a little more predisposed to the NBA or guys that are predisposed to college. I'm always blown away because there is such good basketball in St. Louis, especially high schools in St. Mm-hmm. Louis. You think about Bradley Beal and Jason Tatum both going to the same school. Jason Tatum was playing high school basketball a couple of years ago, and now he's a really important piece of the Celtics. We'll get to him in a bit. But, like, especially in this market where there is no NBA, and I imagine Memphis was maybe similar before the Grizzlies got there, when it was all about the University of Memphis. Prior to that, Memphis State, all about the Tigers. I just don't understand people who are basketball fans who wouldn't watch and experience just the incredible physicality, intelligence, chess match, everything that is the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting that Memphis is a little bit different, because one of the reasons that the NBA came to Memphis back in 2001 was because of the ratings. You know, Memphis was always a town that loved the NBA, even without having an NBA franchise.
Oh, wow.
They were always one of the highest rated NBA finals, All-Star game, all that stuff. They were consistently top five in all the markets of the country, even though they didn't have a team, which was kind of like, okay, well, maybe these guys are, you know, into this. So Memphis was always just a basketball town, period. As far as, like, yeah, I agree with you about St. Louis. I mean, St. Louis is a really smart, it's a great sports town, obviously, and there is a big basketball culture there. And lots of guys, as you mentioned, they not just, you know, recently, but years and years ago, there's been a consistent pipeline of good players coming out of St. Louis. But the college thing, like, what I don't get is, you know, as you say, like, if you love basketball, why wouldn't you want to see it being played at the highest level by the best athletes? Why wouldn't you want to see that the finest iteration of that? Like, I get that, you know, you don't want to go to, like, the fanciest restaurant every night. But, yeah, that doesn't mean you have to decry it as oh, it's terrible, it's awful. No, it's really, really good. And, you know, maybe it's not to everyone's taste, but I would say it's the highest version of that particular product. And, you know, the other thing about this, Chris, is that, like, a lot of times you get stuff, people fool you a little bit with effort, and that kind of masks, like, that they're just not doing very much. They're not actually, like, you know, executing. You can do a lot, and you can flail around, you can move around. I think college guys, there's a lot of effort. Obviously, there's a lot of intensity in what they do, but not always is there a lot of execution. And NBA guys really make it look easy. But I can assure you that if you go down there, if you ever like courtside or watching, there's a lot of physicality. These guys work really hard. They just make it look a lot more simple than it actually is.
You know, just even watching Brad Stevens and some of the stuff that he draws up, some of the plays that, you know, just take, for instance, like the Horford game winner on Saturday night against the Sixers, drawing that up and or I guess not, you know, what it was, the game winner, the go-ahead basket with however many seconds were left. Like, watching that kind of execution and watching, you know, brilliant coaches and then incredibly skilled players, that's just it's such a remarkably high level and such an incredible, incredible entertainment value as well.
Well, one of the interesting things about that, if you want to make that comparison, is that that play that he ran, that last play for Horford that ended up getting them the win in game three, he's actually run that for a while. And he ran that at Butler. And this is brought up by one of his former players, Matt Howard, who actually, I guess, found the film, showed him doing it in college where he was playing the Horford role. And Matt Howard was like a nice, solid workman, like, you know, 3/4. He's a, he's the old lunch pail guy, getting it done, that sort of thing. Never close to an NBA guy. And you watch that play, and you can see kind of the rudiments of how it was going to turn out. But to watch Howard try to finish, he ended up like 15 feet away from the basket with like a jacked up fadeaway because, you know, he's not very good. Whereas Al Horford ends up with a layup because he is. And it's little stuff like that. You say, it's the same play, but it's being done at a much higher level.
Peter Edmiston with us from Sports 56 Radio in Memphis, also the Commercial Appeal. What do you make of Jason Tatum? And certainly the team that he was being drafted on over the summer and what they had headed into the first game of the season, a different team, and he would have a different role. But, you know, with no Gordon Hayward, with no Kyrie Irving, with an increased role for Tatum and a starting role for Tatum, he's been a lot of fun to watch, and that I know is why people in St. Louis are watching. So what have you made of his rookie season and also his first NBA playoffs?
I mean, he's a shot maker. I mean, the dude is just he just goes and gets buckets, and he's fearless. And I know you are a connoisseur of the high school scene there. I know you were involved. Was he ever a featured athlete for KMOX for you guys? Did you ever feature
Tatum? Oh yeah, man. Oh yeah.
Okay, I figured you must have. So was he like that in high school?
Yeah, and you know, I think in high school it was fun to watch and. You know, you knew that he was going to be playing in the NBA, but it was hard because especially there was a good level of talent, but it was hard to maybe say this is what he's going to do right away in the NBA because who he was playing with and who he was playing against. And especially to watch some of the matchups that he's had one-on-one on both ends of the court and the fact that he doesn't look like a 20-year-old guy, that's been most impressive to me, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure. You know, he's such a smooth player.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's hard to tell how it's going to translate when you keep going up a level. Is he going to still be
like,
able to
like it's easy to get a shot against a bunch of, you know, six foot one white kids in high school.
There's potato dudes out there that are just, barely getting by. Yeah. He makes it look, I mean, he goes out there, he's got these, you know, these pull-ups that he's able to just, you know, ease into against, you know, really good defensive players. The fourth quarter of that game three that we alluded to earlier, he's taken Joel Embiid right to the basket, you know, pump fake, you know, right at him. He's not afraid. He's trying to dunk on everybody. I mean, the guy is fearless, and you know he's got that attitude that you really like to see. And it's kind of the same thing that Donovan Mitchell's got, where they don't really feel like rookies. You know, they are primary guys for their teams. They're being asked to carry a big scoring load, and they're really stepping up, and they're not shying away from it. And I don't remember seeing this from too many rookies. I mean, Dwayne Wade was kind of like that, where he really was asked to do a lot scoring wise, and he did. LeBron never got to the postseason as a rookie, so I'm sure he would have done quite well for himself. But we don't know. I mean, it's remarkable. And so Tatum, like, you know, they've asked him to do so much, and he keeps delivering. You know, and as a scorer, he's phenomenal, and his three-point shot is excellent. I think the sky's the limit for him, and he's got to work a little bit defensively, but even then, he's doing a pretty good job of hanging in there, and he's having to guard multiple guys in Brad Stevens' system, so every rookie can always improve their defense, but he's done really well there, and offensively, he's spectacular, so regardless of what happens, And FYI, I think that series is going to go seven. I think Tatum far better than most people thought he was going to be, and he looks like a guy that's probably going to lead Danny Ainge to have fleeced the Sixers in that Markelle Fultz deal.
Yeah, Peter Edmiston with us on the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open line. If they do end up playing Cleveland, it's too bad that we won't have Kyrie Irving. But on the LeBron thing, I think if you're on the outside, maybe looking in, or if you're the casual fan and you're watching, again, you appreciate just the sheer ridiculousness of what LeBron's doing. But I understand why it turns people off a little bit to, you know, turn on the TV or the radio the next day and just hear hot takes about LeBron versus Jordan. Do we have to keep doing that? Does that need to be done every day?
Are you doing it every day?
And by the way, spit a hot take for me.
Are you doing it every day?
No.
Like
even days.
Cardinal post game, where you're like, yeah, by the way, guys, let me fire off a LeBron take for you. Real
and fast also,
here.
Should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, no American mascot.
Is
what's up with that?
Is NASCAR a sport?
Jockeys are not athletes. This is
Giacomo. LeBron Jordan, spit a hot take.
We had to put down. Yeah, okay, so here's the hot take. Barbaro, that's the one I was thinking of.
Barbaro.
We miss Barbaro. We miss Barbaro every day.
And eight bells.
Anyway, so LeBron Jordan, but listen, I don't know. I guess it's like maybe it's a social media thing, Chris, I don't know. But I don't remember that we had to litigate Jordan's place in history with every playoff series, with every playoff game. You know, we would, at the end of each year, like a guy like Karl Malone, let's say, okay? Yeah, you know, Reggie Miller. These are like guys that were, Patrick Ewing, had the reputation of being chokers and not getting it done and couldn't beat Jordan and all that. But I don't remember, like, every game, like, in the post game, we were just, like, going crazy and like, oh, this... I feel like social media has amplified all of this stuff that we might have discussed with our friends, just like, oh, man, you know, Karl Malone kind of sucks or whatever. We've just now taken it to the nth degree. And you can't figure out what a guy's career is going to look like. You can't try to figure out the best of all time or the biggest choker. LeBron was a choker. I mean, you remember, I think you and I were doing shows when LeBron was passing the ball in his first run into the NBA Finals and getting beat by the Dallas Mavericks. Everybody said, this guy's, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have it.
With the Heat, right?
Yeah.
Not even with the Cavs, with the super team.
Yeah, he couldn't get it done. This guy's not clutch. This guy didn't get it. You know, all this stuff. And now he's, you know, one of the greatest of all time. It takes time to figure all that stuff out. And here's the other thing. There's no point. I heard Jordan talk about this. There's no point in discussing the best of all time because the generational differences are so huge that, I mean, Bill Russell would be physically dominated by LeBron.
Right.
He's basically the same height and about 30 pounds lighter.
Yet they changed the rules of the game because of how dominant Bill Russell was.
Absolutely. And he was killing that. He's got 11 titles. He was an amazing player in his time. Wilt Chamberlain was, like, insane. I mean, the dude had a 20-20-20 triple-double one game. The guy was, like, a 48-point-per-game average one year. I mean, just crazy, ridiculous things like that. But the game was so different. If you go back and watch those highlights, he's, like, playing against a bunch of Matt Howards out there. He's playing against a bunch of Chris Rabies out there. You know, it's a bunch of dudes that are just, you know, not getting it done. No offense, buddy. I think you tried your best out there.
I feel
you. But he would have dunked all over you, and rightly so. And so you say, okay, well, I mean, what does that prove? Like a 7'1 guy who's really gifted athletically? I mean, he was a track star. So he's gifted athletically and huge. He's going to dominate all those guys. But would he have dominated now? No, he wouldn't have. It would have been totally different. So all you could say is that is LeBron the best of his era? Absolutely. There's no debate. Don't give me Kobe. Don't give me anybody else. LeBron, unquestionably the best of his era. Was Jordan the best of his era? Absolutely, yes. Was Wilt the best of his era? He or Bill Russell? I mean, the head-to-head was Russell, but Wilt had a lot more statistics. That's the best we can do. And beyond that, it's all just a bunch of Skip Bayless garbage.
It's a good way to put it. Here in our final minute.
There's my hot take, by the way.
In our final minute, we'll have to have you back on. Can the Rockets give the Warriors a real challenge? Are they a legitimate threat to win that series?
Absolutely. Yeah, they are. They're a legit threat to win that series. I don't think they will. But I would say that the Warriors' chances to win are like, 60%.
Could be a really fun series. A lot of possessions.
Yeah, I mean, because here's the thing. Like the Rockets, for all of their ability to score, they don't actually play that fast. They're moderately slowish team. And you have two of the best isolation players in the league that are able to kind of take the air out of the ball a little bit. And the Warriors thrive when you go pump, 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 boom, back and forth. Let's go, let's go, let's go. That's where they really start to shine. But the Rockets, they can take possessions and really take the air out of the ball a little bit. You can have James Harden just kind of do that little low dribble between his legs for 10, 15 seconds. It's not the prettiest basketball, I'll grant you that, but it's effective in slowing down a team that loves to crank up the possessions. So on a possession-by-possession basis, the Warriors are probably a little bit better. But if you can limit those possessions, get lucky at the foul line a little bit, then maybe Draymond kicks somebody in the groin, gets kicked out of the game. Something like that. I mean, you give yourself a puncher's chance, and I think they'll win two games in the series. I think ultimately they go down because I just don't know how you stop that lineup that they throw out there right now. But, I think they've got a chance.
Peter Edmiston, we'll have to have you back on, talk some more NBA, talk some NBA draft, because it's been too long since we've spoken. So appreciate you jumping on with us.
Listen, maybe I would be happy to. We got a top five pick coming here in Memphis.
Sorry, say it again.
We got a top five pick coming in this draft in Memphis.
Oh, I know you do.
Top fiver.
I was hoping it was going to be Michael Porter Jr., but looks like he may not get up that.
Can I give you a little clue here? One of my favorite guys in the whole draft is Jontay Porter.
Really?
I love Jontay Porter. That is absolutely 100% true. I think Jontay Porter is going to be.
He's got a little Draymond to him. I don't think he's a scumbag, he's got a little Draymond.
He's bigger. He's got a little like mini Horford / Draymond-y thing. The guy can play. He's not super athletic by any stretch of the imagination, but the guy can pass, can shoot it a little bit. I like Jontay Porter I think he's a basketball player. I like it.
Well, and he should have been a senior in high school this year.
Yeah, he's barely 18. I mean, that's
super
young.
I saw a stat, and I'll butcher this now, but there was some point early in the season when the only two guys in the nation that were averaging, I want to say it was like 10 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, and better than 35% from three was like Jontay Porter and Marvin Bagley.
I'm telling you, the guy can. There's a little issue with the athleticism. That's why he's not like a lottery.
Well, if he gets picked by a good team, who has time to let him develop? Who knows? But yeah, he should be a senior in high school right now. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable. So like, and he's a guy. There's a little, like I said, I'm not going to take a ton more of your time. I just think that there is a little theory that you got to have guys that can just play, and it's better to eliminate the guys on the floor who can't. There's some, you try to throw an NBA player out there, you try to throw a guy that's all physical potential, but he can't actually feel the game, and he just kind of stops everything, and he gets preyed upon, especially in the postseason. The opposite of that's Jontay Porter. He's not physically dominant, but the dude he knows how to make plays. Good passer, good defensive helper, all those things, good great hands, great awareness. I love that stuff. So I hope he drops to the Grizzlies at 32, but I fear that when the workouts start happening, that I think he'll be a mid to late first round pick when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and there's another one right now, Coben, who's a sophomore in school in Columbia, and then the youngest one, who I think his name's Isaac. He's supposed to be the biggest one. He's supposed to be like 7'2". So he's like in he's like in sixth or seventh grade right now. Yeah. He's supposed to be the biggest one.
He's got 7'2" in sixth grade, right?
No, he's supposed to be though.
Okay. So you got the growth chart in front of you.
Although isn't there a kid down in Louisiana who's like 6'7" and 300 pounds in seventh grade or something?
Yeah, our buddy Adam Kramer wrote about this guy. He's 6'7", 370. And he's in eighth grade.
Oh my god.
6'7", 370 in eighth grade. He's already being recruited by literally everyone on planet Earth.
Hey, what are the what are the grocery bills like in that family? Am I right?
Goodness gracious! I mean, I've heard of a left tackle, but this is ridiculous. He's going to be. I mean, I don't know, man. He hasn't even started lifting weights, really. So, God help us if that guy can figure it out.
Peter, appreciate it, man. We'll talk again soon. Thanks so much.
Sounds great, baby. It was a pleasure, buddy.
All right. It's Peter Edmiston who said he thinks when the workouts start, mid-first round, Jontay Porter could go. He loves him, though. Said he's a little Al Horfordy, little Draymond Greeny. Grant Paulson next.
Why do I skate? Why does the King Panther hunt the gazelle? To live.
The Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line continues on KMOX.
Yup.
Thank you to Grant Paulson and also Peter Edmiston. Dan McLaughlin coming up next with Inside Cardinals Nation. I'll be back with Dan Reardon from 9 until 10 for the Overhead Door Company of St. Louis Golf Hour. Don't go anywhere. Danny Mac coming up next. Shout out Chance Chicago. I'm coming tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.